we're going to tell you why you should build for the AI of the future, not for the AI today. And better yet, Kip and I are going to do a working session, build some real advanced AI prompts, and actually give you a sneak peek of the potential release of the GPT-5 model and where you can go and start using it today. I'm Kieran Flanagan, co-host of Marketing Against the Grain, here as always with my good friend Kip Bodner, co-host of Marketing Against the Grain. Let's get into today's show.
Before we get to today's show, let me tell you about HubSpot. Finding a service solution that helps you keep your customers happy can feel impossible. Like, try to remember the name of that guy you literally just met at the networking event. HubSpot's all-new Service Hub can help. It brings together service and success together on one platform with AI-powered help desk and chatbots to handle your frontline support tickets, so you can scale support and drive retention and revenue. Visit HubSpot.com/service to learn more. Kieran, how we doing, my friend? It's been a while since we've had just the two of us, no guests. We've had some great guests recently, so go back and check some of the recent shows. But like, how you living?
I am busily, even as we speak, Kip, busily trying to play around with the secret release that has come from OpenAI. We think it's kind of like GPT-4.5 is the rumor on Twitter. Why don't we just like get straight into it? Because I'm a nerd.
Yeah, well, we get straight into it. Tell people what happened. Sam Altman had a cryptic tweet.
Oh, let me tell you the full story, because you and I talked off air about, I think one of the things is interesting for our listeners, because it tells our listeners a little bit about us, because it really resonated with me, which is like, AI is bringing out the best and worst of us. What do we mean by that?
we had like a 5-minute therapy session on this.
Yeah. I feel like I talked about this a little bit. You won't get this because you don't watch Three Body Problem, but like in Three Body Problem, there's this kind of civilization and they have like the stable time, the chaotic time, right? And the stable time is actually a time where you can be happy and should be happy. It's a good time in your life, like stability.
I'm never happy
enjoy
there.
Enjoy it. Yeah, have some balance. I unfortunately am not happy there either. And I like chaos, right? I don't know if I've said this on the show before or I said it to someone I was speaking to last week. I forgot who I said this to. But actually, if I'm in a period of stability, I create chaos like all around me, in my life, all around me. And so I need to be in a chaotic time because it brings out the best in me. But it also brings out the worst because I get obsessed and I'm going somewhere with this story. I get singular focused. I know you do this as well. You're incredibly singular focused and can learn things very quickly because of that. So I'm in bed, Kip.
Yep.
Hope gets up at 5:30 in the morning. I play with her a little bit and I look at my phone, which is something you should never do.
You should really not do that, especially when you're with a cute little
baby,
awful. Right?
Yeah, it's an awful habit. So I'm like, oh, you know, and then I look and I'm like, what? New secret GPT model, 5:30 this morning. And so I go hunting it down, right? And so Sam Altman had a cryptic tweet. He talked about the fact he loves GPT-2.
I do have a soft spot for GPT-2.
Sam Altman has really figured out the social game, hasn't he? He's really leaned into X.
Oh, he's killing
it. He's killing it on X. So there's a place you can go. It's pretty cool, actually, where you can play around with all of the models. So Llama, Facebook's big release came out, I think it was last week or the week before. You can go here and play with that if you wanted to. I think it's up here. The other thing people noticed, I think yesterday or today, this morning, was that there was this secret model added, GPT-2 chatbot. And people started playing around with it. So you can go here and prompt it. And so you can play with all of the different LLMs for people who are our listeners. I'm showing a screen. The screen has a dropdown. The dropdown allows me to pick any LLM model I want and then directly chat with that model. So you can like be very first person to try any new model that comes out. Very, very cool. Now, I will put in a prompt. And so what I actually did when you were teeing up the intro is you and I talked about an app that I was thinking would be a really cool app for marketers. And I want to use this because it shows you how quickly things can move. So I asked Claude while you were doing the intro to like build me a prompt for AI to build a project brief for that app. And I'm going to try to put the prompt into the GPT 4.5, which is rumored to be GPT 4.5 on this.
Yeah, so this is rumored to be a new model, but not GPT-5, like GPT 4.5. A big improvement on GPT-4, but not a full turn to GPT-5.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I think people are just speculating because there were some maths questions people trialed with it. There were some coding questions and they saw that the performance was better than GPT-4. So the kind of rumor online is that this is somewhere in between. Like they are starting to put this out here to train it. So it's a step towards GPT-5, but it's like somewhere in between. Now, what I think will happen here for people following along on YouTube who are looking at my screen is I will get rate limited because I was trying it earlier on. Everyone is trying this and there's just not enough bandwidth.
Of course, there's a lot of buzz because, yeah. You know, Sam's good at Twitter.
So here we go. It won't let me do it. So pretty anticlimactic. But for people who are following along on YouTube or listeners, this will probably be a couple of days later. You can go to the URL. We put it in the show notes. It's chat.lmsys.org.
We'll link it up down in the description here.
Right. Probably be more usable. So that is what I spent my morning doing because we've seen this huge progression in models, right? We've seen Claude come out with some really great models. That's what I kind of use day in, day out. I have started to use Gemini Advanced. Someone put me onto that model. It's pretty great. And actually GPT-4 has been relegated to like third place for me. So I use Claude, then we'll use Gemini Advanced, and then use ChatGPT Pro. ChatGPT Pro appears to have gotten worse over time. And there's a reason for that. We can maybe do a whole episode. It's called Habsburg AI that I need to look into, basically why LLM models get worse over time. And so OpenAI is a little bit behind the curve right now. And so this would be exactly what we expect them to do, which is like come out with a model that blows every other model away. And maybe we can talk a little bit about the fact that, you know, we've talked about it before, the economic upside for companies and models is going to come way down over time because Facebook really changed the entire game by releasing Llama, which was just as good a model as any of the paid, and they open sourced it, which is pretty huge deal.
The way I think about this, Kieran, is one, it's interesting, right? The AI models are kind of penalized for being popular, right? Because they're trained on all of the human interactions that like the more popular, potentially the more volatile your model could be. And in some ways could get worse, which is what you're saying is happening with GPT-4 and which is why you're using it less and using things like Claude a lot more, right? But
right.
We know the pace of innovation is going to be super high. And that whether this is GPT-4.5 or GPT-5 that they're testing through this kind of like very small scale audience, we know that we're going to be doing a show at some point about the release of 4.5 or 5 and walking through you all the things it's better at, especially for kind of marketing and business use cases. And that's just an inevitability because we are on this steady march of progress. The thing to remember is that AI is going to get exponentially better. And the cost of compute to give everybody cheap access to the AI is going to get exponentially cheaper. So it's going to get better and it's going to get more cost effective to access. Like that is just like a fact. And we are just marching down that progress. And we're seeing that now with this secret release of a new model from OpenAI. And we're going to see that just kind of happen from all the big LLM players.
Right. The thing you and I have talked about is if you were pretty wise in this time, you would build for the model as it is in 18 months and 24 months time and use the current models.
Explain what you mean by that. You and I had a off-air WhatsApp about that. I thought this was brilliant. Break it down for people what you really mean. Like what should they actually be doing?
So I think what most people do is they take the model and then they look to see what use cases I can build around this model. And so for the most part, these models are not great at customer-facing use cases because they're too unreliable. The actual output is pretty inconsistent. And so you're not going to put it in your front and center or go-to-market or places like that because you're worried about the actual results. I think that's the wrong way to build for AI. Like for sure, you should have some use cases that you can build with the current model in mind and you can put out live and use them. The other thing I would do is I would build use cases for where the models are going to be in 12, 18, 24 months time because I would want to be the first person to actually turn on those use cases when the models catch up to what I want to do. So the bet I would make is AI is going to be exponentially better than it is today, like exponentially better today. And I will bet my entire career on that, right? That it's just a given. You don't need to question that. It's just a given. And I would build a certain percentage of the use cases with that in mind. And so I would say, okay, look, across the entire go-to-market, across my business, where do I think AI is going to be most helpful in 12, 18, 24 months time? And I would build out all of the infrastructure to bring that use case to life and plug in the current model as a minimal viable version. And so I would look at the current model and I would put that into the use case and I would say, cool, it's like good. It's not anywhere near customer facing or that I can use, but it's pretty good. And as soon as that new model comes online or a new model comes online, I can just plug it in and see the results get much, much better. This is why the startup ecosystem for AI sector is so interesting, right? Because never before that I can think of, a whole bunch of startups get exponentially better.
Better overnight.
Right. When these models come out, they get exponentially better. Now, there's a whole other downside to that, that if you are building some sort of wrapper around OpenAI or you're building something that OpenAI itself will do with these models, you're just going to get smoked, right? But the way to keep ahead of that is like to build, again, for the future, not build for today. Sam Altman himself has said these models are not very good, right? Mm-hmm. If these are the not very good models, you should be prepared for the very good models. And that's the way I think about AI. So when I'm practicing and learning and doing things, I don't look at it like a lot of people go and say, that sucked. I looked at it and go, that's pretty interesting. I'll keep that one in the back pocket. And as soon as the model catches up to what I want to do, I'll just plug that back in again.
You know what, Kieran? I want to share with everybody that you've really come a long way.
Let's go.
When I met young Kieran Flanagan, he was one hell of a pessimist.
Oh, yes, I know.
And one hell of a skeptic. And look at you now. You are like Captain Optimism over here.
I know.
You are basically like, look, this is going to get better. 10 years ago, Kieran would have been like, oh, AI can't do what I needed to do. It sucks. I'm just going to ignore it. And now you're like, hey, first of all, I think it's pretty awesome. Everybody's kind of, you know, shitting on it, but I think it's pretty great. And second of all, I think it's going to get way better. So I'm going to build the infrastructure now to take advantage of it. Because my point is here, people who are optimists and embracing this technology are going to end up way ahead of everybody else for the point you right. just made. They're going to have a lot of the infrastructure done that as the models get better and better, that they're just going to go live immediately while everybody else is playing catch up. And it's going to create this really large divide between kind of the AI optimists and the AI skeptics. And the AI right. optimists are going to get a really huge return on their optimism.
Right. There's two things that I have learned over the past number of years. The thing that really helped me actually was in 2021, I really wanted to get into angel investing. It was a thing I wanted to get better at. I think you remember that time. And since then, I've kind of done what I usually do, which is like talk to people who are much better than me, do trial and error, like figure out what my frameworks are, get into the arena, as Chamath famously said, and actually do a ton of deals. And you know what it's really taught me is when you meet all these incredible founders, you really want to stand behind your conviction and you want to be an optimist about the future, right? Like you cannot actually be a very good investor if you're a pessimist because you are backing companies who have these large visions and I'm mostly investing in pre-seed and seed stage. So you have to believe in their optimism that the future that they are trying to shape will come true. And I think that's really helped me to say, well, if I have deep conviction about something, you want to stand behind that and go all in. And actually you want to be optimistic about the outcome, right? And also there was a really great tweet. I don't know who it was from, but it was from an incredible founder. I remember putting it into my swipe file, which is like optimist gets paid. Optimists have much better outcomes financially than pessimists. And I am a coin operated person. So I was like,
do you know what the quote is? A lot of people have said it. I forget okay. who it's attributed to, but pessimists get to be right. Optimists get to be rich.
There you go. That is actually the quote.
That is the quote.
That is the quote. So there you go.
We'll be right back. But before, let me tell you about another podcast I love. Nudge, hosted by Phil Agnew, is brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. Ever noticed how the smallest changes can have the biggest impact? On Nudge, you learn simple evidence-backed tips to help you kick bad habits, get a raise, grow a business. Every bite-sized 20-minute show comes packed with practical advice. Nudge is fast-paced, but is still insightful with real-world examples that you can apply. Oh, and it's the UK's fastest growing business podcast. If you want an MBA's worth of insight in one podcast, this is the right show for you. Entrepreneurs will love this show because it's filled with repeatable, proven studies, not hearsay and one-off success stories. You're going to love the show because I was interviewed by Phil. You can go check out my episode. And I recently listened to an awesome episode. It's called 6 Scientifically Proven Persuasion Techniques. It's a must listen for anyone in marketing. Listen to Nudge wherever you get your podcasts. Kieran, I want to stoke your optimism a little bit because everybody's out here kind of talking about AI being, it's fine right now. It can do some things. I want to show you a marketing use case that I was playing with last night that I think is actually pretty good and pretty close today. About a week or so ago, I was talking to an awesome founder, Raising Around, if you want me to connect you. Her name's Chelsea. She runs brand.ai. And she was talking to me about how she's been working with some academics and some professors, and they've been doing a lot of research around kind of brand tracking. And brand tracking is traditionally done through these very expensive and slow surveying processes, right? Where you go pay for a panel of respondents, you field a survey, you get all the data back, and you kind of analyze that data. And from there, the output is normally aided awareness, unaided awareness, Maybe you might do a net promoter score. It might be kind of the key reasons people pick your products, things like that, right? But it's pretty expensive. We have to be kind of a capital B brand, pretty big business to afford to do that. And it takes a long time. And most companies do it quarterly. The really big ones can like pull it off like monthly, right? But it's slow and arduous. But I was talking to her and she was like, well, you know what we found? Like some of the folks I've talked to have found that like LLMs are within a couple percentage points of that survey method for that data. And I was like, wow, that's kind of interesting. Like that would save companies a whole lot of money, make marketers way more agile if you could get real brand and product marketing insights for essentially free or close to free and basically in real time, or you know, you could do it every week versus every month or whatever, right? So she was working with a professor from UC Berkeley who did a big academic study comparing traditional brand tracking survey methods to LLM brand tracking reputation and found that they were like much closer than you would expect.
Just querying the LLM.
Yeah. So
fascinating.
I want to show you. I'm so excited about this. It's rare that I get to do something AI related that Kieran hasn't done yet. So like, I'm very excited. So I started in ChatGPT because as we said, I was like, oh, this would probably be the worst result, right? Like because of how the current models are performing. But I find I like to iterate on prompts in ChatGPT. That's just me.
Yes, 100%.
So you'll see here, I've iterated on this prompt 5 different times to get it to a place where I like. And by the way, if you're watching the show, we're creating a prompt library of a lot of the prompts we've talked on the show, and we're going to be releasing those soon. So this will be in there. I did this for HubSpot because it's obviously the company I know the most information about. And Kieran, you having worked at HubSpot will kind of understand a lot of the nuance here. And you can tell me if I got the prompt right, right? Which is, I was like, hey, I would like your help in determining my brand awareness and positioning. You have access to a large amount of consumer sentiment and intelligence in your training data. I would like you to help me determine some information for my company, HubSpot. And I go on to describe what HubSpot is, who we sell to, because I wanted to try to define the target market. And then I tell it who the decision makers for that product are. Okay. Then I say, I would like you to estimate what is our aided awareness, but I want you to do it specifically for companies between 200 and 2,000 employees. I give it more context. So please consider we're currently the number 2 player in the CRM market and have less aided awareness than the market leader. Please provide an estimated percentage of 0 to 100% and give me an estimate no wider than 10 points. Because at my first prompts, it was giving me like 30, 40 point ranges. So I had to kind of cull it down to like, give me a kind of 10 point range. Then I asked it, what are the key reasons businesses select HubSpot over competitors? And then I was like, well, brand awareness, that might be interesting, but what about net promoter score? Could it give me a proxy for net promoter score? And I said, what would you estimate our net promoter score of our customer base to be based on public sentiment? Please provide estimated numerical score for this request. Please make sure the range is no wider than 10 percentage points. All right, you following me?
Dope.
Is there anything you would have done different in that prompt?
This is a great example of, I think we put this in an episode, I put it on LinkedIn, which is people say ChatGPT Pro is not useful to me, especially for strategy. And I said, it's because you're not very good at strategy. So this is a good example of a prompt where you deeply understand the request, like you deeply understand what you're trying to ask it to do. And that's the reason your results are going to be much better than most. The other part of it is the only thing I would probably add is for it to summarize how it came to its conclusion. Tell me your sources.
Should I add, you want me to add that in there?
I think that's the thing I would add in is like, please give me your summary of how you came to the conclusions you did. Because I want to see if it references any particular sources.
Please give me a summary of how you came to the conclusion for these questions.
Yeah, exactly. I do love this because LLM is just trained on the internet. And if you actually ask it for aided or unaided awareness, it's probably going to look at like how many times your brand appears in certain ways.
So obviously, I know what these numbers are. I'm not going to disclose these numbers, right? But I'm going to give us some directionality. But because of that, I could craft the prompt a lot better.
Right.
Right? And so I think it would be harder if you're like, hey, I just don't know what my awareness, aided awareness or net promoter score is. But I think if you went and fielded that once or twice, you could probably continue monitoring it with LLMs much cheaper. Because let me show you what it gives me, Kieran. It's saying right here that among business buyers, company, it's estimated at 65 to 75%. That is not correct, but it's in the ballpark of correct, right? It is not accurate, but it's not wildly inaccurate. And it gave me a nice rationale. saying, you know, guesses who the number one player in the market is. And it tells us that we've made significant improvements, right? Why do people pick HubSpot? User friendliness, integrated suites, scalability, strong customer support, and cost effectiveness. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I've done some tests on it, picking why people pick certain products. It actually is pretty good.
It's pretty good. And then estimated net promoter score. Based on public sentiment and typical feedback loops over observed online, HubSpot's NPS is estimated between 30 and 40. It is not that far off from that range. It's not.
I do wonder how it calculates that. Is it just like looking at the average SaaS company is and within certain ranges and puts you in the average, or does it have some?
But you have some historical data here. This is pretty good.
Yeah, but I wonder, is it just a coincidence that it's good? You know what I mean? Does it look at
average
NPS scores for SaaS brands?
You know what, Kieran? I had the same thing. So you know what I thought would be a good idea to do? I was like, why don't I just do this in a different LLM? Right? And you just told me Claude is the one you're using the most, right?
Right.
So I was like, cool. Well, why don't I, and this is the prompt before we just edited a second ago, why don't I just take the same prompt, put it into Claude, and see what I got here? And I put the same prompt in, and I get a better result, Kieran.
Yes. Well, that's what I'm saying. My buddy Claude.
So.
Still not in Europe. Paid version, you saw.
What'd you say? My paid version? I know.
Paid version, still not in Europe. Like, I'm like, I'm tweeting them, tweeting the developer. Like, come on, let's go.
So. This is within a few percentage points, this range. It is not like it's close-ish. It's a decent enough approximation. And it rationalizes kind of why we got there. It picks the right criteria, very similar to GPT-4, right?
Right.
Easy to use, integrated, scalable solutions, good customer support, almost the same set of attributes. So one takeaway here is that like your product marketing attributes and the reasons customers choose your product or your competitor's product are pretty apparent in the market, and an LLM's pretty good at identifying that. And it came back with the same net promoter score range, which again, is not that far off the current net promoter score range. What I would say here is like, this is very good.
It would be interesting to do it as another SaaS brand and see if it actually has the same sort of scores.
Well, you could do the opposite. You could do a company like Apple, which I think historically has been reported to be in that kind of 75 to 90% range, right?
Right.
And so, you know, we can just go to a new ChatGPT here.
I do love this. Like what we're basically saying, and I guess the bet that Brand.ai is making, and I have to give some credit here to Wade, because Wade, when I was at Zapier, we do the same thing, right? Like brand studies that showed aided and unaided awareness, and they were super helpful in some of the context. But he's like, why do you need to do these surveys? Why can't we just use an LLM to query the internet? And I think he's right. Like, I think what you're saying is that entire industry is going to come under pressure, because why do you survey 1,000 people when you can just ask the internet?
My point is, I think if you and I sat down for another hour together and we just crafted, really refined the prompt, I've done 6 revs now, right? Like, let's say we did another 6 to 10 revs. I think we could probably get within a 5% margin of error,
right,
on what the real data is versus what the LLM is telling us. And if you can get that close, because what you actually care about in brand tracking is less about what the absolute number is and more the trend line of, is it getting better or is it getting worse?
Right.
Right. So if you can get a really good prompt where you have really clear, consistent ways to retrieve the data, then you just track it every week, every month, at whatever frequency is right, and understand how it's going.
So I really want to show you this because it ties perfectly into the conversation we're having. And it's pretty interesting because it's another example where Claude got this right, because Claude agrees with us. So,
hi, Claude. Thanks for your help, man.
One of the things I've got obsessed with, because we have Rand coming on the show and we put out this quote that Sam Altman, it was attributed to him, whether he said it or not. It was a really great quote. Got a ton of people talking, which is potentially AI will automate 95% of a marketer's work. And Rand believes that it's actually the opposite. Like, it will struggle to automate more than 5% of a marketer's work. And I think that's going to be a great debate. Make sure you subscribe. Rand's coming on the show. We're going to debate that point.
I'm excited for that.
So I want to be prepped, but I also got obsessed by that, which is, boy, like all of these marketing roles are a series of tasks. And if you break down the tasks, what tasks will be automatable versus not automatable in the future? And it's really interesting. We can stick with brand because it's really interesting what we're talking about, right? So I build a prompt in Claude. I asked it to break down individual marketing roles. And here's how it breaks down brand marketing, like the role of brand marketing. Now, this isn't as detailed as what I will eventually get into, But this is a good overview, right? It breaks into what is the subtasks, right? So it says, hey, brand marketing involves defining guidelines, creating branded content, monitoring brand sentiment and online discussions, which is kind of what we're talking about, personalizing brand experiences across channels, identifying influencers and partners to amplify the brand, analyzing performance data to optimize brand and efforts. Now, the cool thing is, and for people following the RSS, I'll continue to call it out, but if you're on the YouTube, you can follow along and see the actual prompt that's on our screen that we're looking at on Claude. Now it breaks into automatable tasks and manual tasks, right?
Yes. This is really smart,
the reason I did this,
I like this a lot.
You know, I did the kind of free AI course. I want to do something more intensive next. And so I really want to like figure out if I can automate marketing roles, right? If I can create AI agents that will automate a large part of individual marketing roles. So I want to go through really quickly, but I want to touch on the brand monitoring one. So it says what you can automate in the future is a bunch of the content creation, right? We kind of agree with this, right? That you've just shown me a company that are doing some of this, which is the visuals, the video, the written content, mm-hmm. but the brand guidelines. And it will be able to have a system where you create those things and it will adjust them to make sure that they adhere to your brand guidelines. That we can, you know, talk about how useful brand guidelines actually are. But I think if it believes you can do that, it believes you can do audience segmentation. But here's the one, it gets this right, right? It says the task that AI can do, it puts brand monitoring,
yeah.
right? Employing AI to scan social media reviews, brand mentions, sentiment analysis. It basically didn't put the fact that it could then translate them and, you know, articulate them really well. Because basically what AI can do is aggregate all the data, but then provide you an executive report of that data,
yeah.
right? Which is the thing that your prompt is doing.
We are not very far. I would say months from the point where we could have a really sick prompt for brand monitoring for a company and a set of competitors that an agent runs daily.
And put a GUI on top of it.
Yeah.
Put a simplistic GUI on top of it and then have it like look really nice.
The agent could even just send you an executive briefing every morning in your email.
I think I might build this.
Doesn't matter.
This is not that
hard to
build.
There's a bunch of different ways to bring it.
This is not that hard to build.
Like you and I sadly could probably do this in like
right.
a couple of weeks. And that displaces like billions of dollars of companies.
Right. Just give a free tool away. Have AI build you a brand aided and unaided awareness report. Now, I know we're going to get the people who use those reports. Ah, but you talk to individuals, you get the context, you get all of that stuff. Sure. But that's 1,000 people versus everyone who's created something online.
But no, I think what you would do here, and again, I think where anyone, you, me, or anyone is going to run into trouble is if you are too binary in your thinking.
Right.
Right? Like, I think one of the ways in this brand monitoring space, for example, I think one of the things you would do is have the agent spot outlier data and have the agent prompt you when it might make sense to go run a survey.
Mm, and you should be able to upload your data, like your sales calls,
yes,
your social media tracker. You should be able to upload that data so you can combine that with
about to build an AI SaaS company right now.
Yeah. So I had thought about, because this is a version of what I put out there that, like, I actually want to build this as one of my first. So people know I'm coming back to HubSpot. One of the things that I really am interested in doing is some sort of like Grammarly type tools for customer language. Because it's pretty easy to build. Like all you actually need to do is have your customer language sources and upload them. You can have ChatGPT Pro basically aggregate that data, create PDFs based upon themes within that file and language and tone and voice guidelines based upon that data, and then upload it to GPT and create a custom GPT. So when you upload a blog post or whatever else, it can check it against a language file, which is based upon all of your gone calls, based upon all of your website data, based upon whatever social media mentions. And instead of like correcting your grammar and spelling, it corrects your language to match how your customers actually speak. There's just so many things you can build. It's overwhelming.
There's so many things you built. And by the way, everybody, in case you just missed Kieran's really quick announcement, you are coming back to HubSpot. You and I are going to work together again. We're going to AI-ify the world of marketing and
you're going to AI-ify everything.
Kick some serious ass. And so leave Kieran a little congratulations comment. I'm super psyched. You didn't want to spend much time on it, but I think it's important for our regular listeners, regular viewers to understand what was going on.
Right. As someone said in my comment, on the comment in the LinkedIn post where I mentioned it, I'm not surprised. All you guys do is obsess about AI.
But you know what? I like being on the right side of history. And I'm very much looking forward to being on the right side of history with you because we are going to do this and we're going to do it much better and much faster than anybody else. And I feel pretty optimistic about the results that are going to come from that. So
right.
It's pretty exciting. I love this. I'm really pumped for this episode coming up with Rand, Kieran, but like, I like the automatable and non-automatable. I think you should edit this prompt though for AI to give you like a confidence score of the stuff you can automate. Like how well is it going to automate? And like, what's the time frame that it thinks to automate it really, really well? Like, oh, like, you know, there's going to be gaps in X, Y, and Z today, but you know, once models get better, it will, you know, will work.
I think it needs a confidence score. The other thing I'm going to do is focus on one role. I might take brand because we talked about it so much. I can come back to the listeners and show it. But basically, under each automatable task, have it create a project brief of how it would automate that and then plug that into Gemini Advanced. Because Gemini Advanced is actually really good for kind of coding projects. Just plug the brief into Advanced and look to see how far it gets on like coding a singular workflow. I'll start with the brand monitoring because I think that is like a easy place to start.
It's close, right? Like that is a task that... You saw what I did. It's not that far off. If we kept iterating on it, we could get something that would provide you very helpful data anytime you ran it.
Right. The thing it would need to do is you would need to add a confidence score for the AI to say there's a certain amount of data that has to exist online for me to be able to do this. So you can imagine we created this and released it to everyone, which we should do, that you can come and just add your email address and brand and it would send you your aided unaided awareness through the LLM. But it would need to say, hey, like your brand just doesn't have enough data online for me to be able to do something.
Yes, you would have to have a version of the prompt that's like, I want you to have a greater than X percent confidence that this result is accurate based on this brand being big enough and having enough conversation.
If you are not big enough for this tool, you shouldn't be working on brand anyway. Like, well, you're probably just not a big company.
We'd literally be like, cool, if you don't return in this, don't worry about brand. Go out and build a bigger business.
Exactly. Demand gen the hell out of things.
Yeah, 100%. All right, anything else, my friend?
No, this was fun. AI, this was AI, great. AI, AI.
AI, AIO? it's like you're going to start singing your daughter like little AI-themed nursery rhymes. AI, it's going
to
be sweet.
This was like a working session, so people got to see us actually just like, we're actually just doing a real Be and You Catching Up session.
Yeah, this is like literally how our lives work, so it's pretty awesome. But we were going to have a new OpenAI model soon.
Yes.
And even with all the, sometimes I think, criticism of AI, it's really good. It's still really good and it's going to get way better. The brand tracking use case, that is months off. That's not years off.
Right.
And so I think the most important thing for everybody to take away today is, was Kieran's point of like, if you're building for AI now, you're kind of future-proofing because you can take the infrastructure you built, swap out a new model in the future, and the results are going to be instantly better.
Right. Exactly. That is the nugget of wisdom.
Which is a pretty amazing outcome of your investment and your optimism. And so this is a little pro AI optimism show today. I hope you learned a few things. I hope you give that brand tracking prompt a try. Leave us a comment if you do and you see if it's really good or really bad for data about your company. We'll see you real soon on another episode of Marketing Against the Grain.